people of God. It's a rebellion, but it's actually a ridiculous rebellion. And I mean that in the sense of worthy of ridicule. The people definitely rebel, but it's not only that, it's a ridiculous rebellion. And perhaps you're hearing this for the first time and you've heard this read and you think, well, is that a bit harsh in your evaluation? Are you saying, well, it's, you know, they didn't really know what they were getting themselves in for? Is that not a really harsh evaluation of the events that happened? Well, no, it's not. If you know the contexts, then you will agree with me that this is in fact a ridiculous rebellion. Even though they started well, these people actually did the right thing at the beginning. These 12 men were sent out. They did exactly as Moses commanded. They went by the south. You see that in verse 20 and 21 of chapter 13, 22. They went up through the south exactly as Moses asked them to. The fact that they went was a good thing. This was going to be a difficult journey. It would be a dangerous one as well. Difficult because of the time of year. It was says here that it's the time of the first grapes in verse 20. That would mean it's a hot time, and you know what it's like in Israel. I've had the privilege of being there. It's a dusty place. They would have to go through dangerous territories, and they would have to do dangerous territories for some time. It says they were there for 40 days. Can you imagine being in enemy territory for 40 days? It was not only a difficult journey, it was a dangerous one. And they weren't looking from miles away through binoculars. They're actually among their enemies. Verse 32, whether they were exaggerating, I don't think so. It says that the land that we have gone into or through, they were actually among the enemies. Face to face, perhaps, with people who could blow their cover at any time and arrest them. These were faithful initially. Just 10 of them in lands that were fortified and with so-called giants. But the praise of these men stops fairly soon because they come back. They come back and they bring a bad report. Verse 28 and 29 of chapter 13. This is what they said. Yes, there is fruit. Yes, this land is flowing with milk and honey. But what do they say? The people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. They're initially faithful, but they crumble when they look at the circumstances. They say, the people are strong and large. Verse 33, they say this, there we saw giants, the descendants of Anak, come from the giants. They see the people and say, there's no way we can conquer them. It's not just one giant amongst a population, but it's plural. And they list off people after people. Malachites, Hittites, Amorites. This is a numerous people that they're building up the fear of and the reality of what they have to conquer. But they don't believe that God can conquer for them. These are not a people who are large and numerous and living in tents that could be ambushed at some point easily. But they're living in fortified cities. Plural. They are established. And they just see the problems. And they don't see the great promise keeper. And it gets worse This is how far the rebellion goes. They don't keep it to themselves or simply go to Moses and Aaron and say, by the way, in confidence, you may want to rethink this. They spread the word. They get before the people and trouble them. This is outright rebellion. And so we see the people are shaken. Chapter 14, verse 1. All the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And so the cancer has spread through the camp. These 10 have been instrumental in spreading fear and exaggeration. And so you can see this is a rebellion, but perhaps you're still thinking, well, that's a harsh evaluation. But it's not. It's a ridiculous rebellion, full and worthy of ridicule. Why do I say that? Well, remember when these events took place. This is not hundreds of years after the great Exodus. This is 2 years after the Exodus. They had witnessed these great wonders that God had done. And they're quickly forgetting these things. They had forgotten his promises and all the ways in which God had been with them in the past. If you think about it, these things before them, all the tribes and so on, they're actually smaller than what God had done for them in the past. He had lifted them out of slavery under one of the most powerful men in the whole world at that time, right before his face. And yet they're so quick to forget. Think of the wonders that they saw in the Exodus, the great plagues that came down, 10 opportunities for the Egyptians to change their minds, and all the wonders that happened. They saw all that. They saw signs and wonders, and yet they were so quick to crumble when they were faced with this obstacle. Think about the Red Sea. It wasn't just that they were brought out of Egypt, remarkable in itself, but they were brought through the Red Sea, that the sea stacked up side by side, and they walked through every single one of them. And then just to show that God was not doing it by accident, they fell on top of their enemies. And so they had great instances of seeing God's power. And they had seen his provision. It wasn't that God redeemed them out of Egypt and then left them to themselves. You remember that God sent manna. He sent quail to show them in anger. But he also sent water. And reflecting upon these things, Moses could write that not even their clothes wore out or even their sandals wore out during this time. They'd seen God's power. They'd seen his provision. And they also had his presence. Think about this. In the very book of Numbers, we see and are reminded of the fact that God went before them visibly in a pillar of smoke and of fire. They had no excuse. The tabernacle, right in their midst, geographically centered, the pillar of smoke would come down. They could see with their eyes that God was with them. And then the benediction in chapter 6 of Numbers, that God doesn't simply with them and had to be persuaded that he was for them and not against them. The priests regularly would say, as we heard from our minister this morning, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. So many ways in which they had been reminded and been reminded recently, visibly, exhaustively, and yet they stumble when they come across this lesser trial that was set before them. And so this is why it's a rebellion, but it's a ridiculous rebellion. And before we start filling ourselves up with pride, we need to look at ourselves. Can we be like this? Can we doubt God when it comes to us? Do we have giants in our lives, as it were? Do we have fortified cities that, yes, God has helped me in all these ways in the past, but this particular one is just outside of God's power. God can't provide for me in this particular place, this particular circumstance. God will not be here when I do this. And you can fill in the blanks in your own circumstances. Perhaps you're here this evening and you think, well, I've heard a lot about Christianity, but do you know, God can't save anyone like me. It's impossible for God to save someone like me. Is it? God can do anything. Give your life to God and He will save you. Or perhaps you've got a particular circumstance, maybe near the end of your life, and you think, well, yes, I can look back all those times, but you don't know this particular circumstances. As I come near the River of Jordan, will I get through that? Perhaps you're wondering how God's going to provide for your family. He's provided in the past, but you know this is different. Or perhaps, finally, you're thinking about a particular calling. Perhaps you feel called to an office of the church, but you think, well, I don't know if God's going to be with me in that. These are ways in which we can doubt God, and we can be like the ten. We have to be like the hymn writer who says, all the way the Saviour leads me, what have I to ask beside? So in contrast, we see secondly and more briefly the resolute faith of Caleb. And I want to be briefly in particular because we don't want to hold up Caleb as some sort of hero. He is worthy of admiration, but ultimately we'll see it is God who gets the glory here. But Caleb does stand out. It says that he has a different spirit to the people. Chapter 14 and verse 24. But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went. He has a different spirit. Now, you could take this as he's just got some character trait within him, like that old dog that he is, the faithful, tenacious one. But we have to look at it and recognize that God gets all the glory here. Caleb has a different spirit because the Spirit of God has converted him. The Spirit of God has converted him. He is a different spirit. And so he's enabled to stand in this day of trial. Notice how he reacts. We see that he, just briefly, ways in which his character can be emulated. We can seek to follow him in this way. He is an emotive follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. His following of God is full of emotion. In verse 30, he quiets the people of chapter 14. Now imagine this entire multitude going berserk. To quiet the people, you've got to be full of emotion. How could he just doesn't hold up his hand. He is so caught up with the glory of God and what he believes that he manages to quiet the people. Secondly, in verse 6 of chapter 14, he tears his clothes. He is so concerned with God's glory and the way in which God can help him. It affects him emotionally and he tears his clothes. And you know, this is a way of showing his immense grief at that time. But he's no mere emotional man, driven by emotions only. These have boiled up from something that is much further within. He is a courageous man. He stands against his fellow elders. Think about that. 10 v 2. 10 v elders of the congregation. These are men who would have been trusted, who have come back with a report that is partially true. In fact, it could be fully true. At no point does Caleb say, actually, they're exaggerating. But he stands against them and says, these things may be true, but look beyond ourselves and look to the one who is able to help us. He is courageous. And I wonder if you're courageous. I wonder if you were faced with a position where you had to be alone. Because he stands alone here. He is the only voice of reason. Yes, Moses and Aaron and Joshua do different things here. But it is Caleb who speaks. Caleb is the voice of courage. And then thirdly, and we see that he is someone who is instant in his faithfulness. Verse 30, he says, "Let us go up at once and take possession." He doesn't have to sit and think about whether I should serve God. He is instant in his faithfulness. And as we seek to apply these things to ourselves, we have to ask ourselves, are we emotive, as it were, with our allegiance to God? Does it affect us emotionally? One of the problems with church down through the centuries is that they've believed it in their mind and it hasn't boiled over into emotion. I'm not saying we should have emotion only, but do you believe it passionately? Could people tell that something has grieved you against your God? When someone swears and takes the Lord's name in vain, would you be visibly changed by it? Caleb was, when the name of God was at risk. Would we passionately stand for him and passionately stand for God when it gets tough? Because it's easy to be faithful when things are going well, isn't it? Let's say all 12 came back and said the same thing. He wouldn't be a hero. But when even fellow members of the congregation say things, we are to be like Caleb, and we're to be like him instantly. We shouldn't have to dilly-dally when it comes to obedience. It should come natively and instantly. But briefly, I want to look at Caleb briefly because we don't want to hold him up as some kind of hero. He is, in a way. But we see, thirdly, the reason for Caleb's resolute faith. Why was he able to stand? Was it because he was some sort of super Christian? It is simply this. If you're going to remember one thing this evening, remember this. Caleb believed in God when others did not. That's it in a nutshell. There's more to unpack from that, but simply it's that. That Caleb believed God when others did not. Why did he believe? Well, he had this different spirit. He had been born again. And so he was enabled to have eyes to see. It caused him to believe. Caused him to believe the power, the provision, and the presence of God. First of all, the power. This is what you'll see as he speaks, what is dominating his conversation. The power, the presence, and the provision. First of all, the power. We see that he says, "Well, remember God's power." Verse 30, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." Verse 9 of chapter 14, "Do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the Lord, for they are our bread. For their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." Caleb has saturated himself in the knowledge that God is powerful. God is powerful. And we see this in this illustration of the bread. Bread doesn't put up a good fight, does it, children? Bread just crumbles in our hands. And he's saying that if God is for us, his power will be demonstrated and just the man would be like bread crumbling away. It's not confidence in himself or in the large number of people that would have been part of this people at the time. Ultimately, it's in God himself, his power. But secondly, the provision. This is also seeping into his character. He is standing on the promises that God will provide. Chapter 14 and verse 8. "If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Caleb was able to look back and say, well, the Lord has provided for us through the wilderness. He's going to provide for us now in this land that we can see before us, with land flowing with milk and honey. And then we see, ultimately, the reason why these things can be accomplished is because God is with them. He remembers God's ongoing presence. Not that God was with them or will be with them at some future point, but that he is with them. Verse 9 of chapter 14. Do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them. And the Lord is with us. This is the ultimate way in which God, Caleb has garnered his faith, that he has placed his faith upon these things. So it's not so much the faithfulness of Caleb, but the faithfulness of God in which Caleb had entrusted himself. And undergirding all these things, God's power, his protection, his presence, ultimately, it's God's promise. The promises of God that had been made. These are the foundation stone that Caleb had built his life upon. Why do I say that? Because God had made clear promises that they would inherit, that they would be provided for, that he would be with them. Way back, Genesis, he had made these promises. And there are many more which I'll not read out. But Genesis 12 and verse 2, way back, hundreds of years before, he says to Abraham, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you will be a blessing. 12 verse 6 and 7. Then the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to your descendants I will give you this land. And then verses chapter 15 and verse 18, he specifically says which land. And note the similarities with the names that are mentioned. Chapter 15, verse 18. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, to your descendants, I have given you this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Girgashites, the Jebusites. Caleb remembered the promises of God given to Abraham, that these very nations that were before them were going to be given to him. That's why he's so confident. He's so confident because he believes in God and his promises. Exodus chapter 31 and verse 1. This is just, in the recent past of these people, they will know that God is faithful to his promises. And this is why the rebellion was so ridiculous. Exodus chapter 31 and verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, depart and go up from here, you and your people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt, to the land which I swore to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. To your descendants I will give it. Verse 3, go up into a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up into your midst, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people. And of course, that's talking about another instance of when they are rebelling against them. But there it is before them, a promise that is about to be fulfilled. And so Caleb, on the brink of this promise, is saying that he is going to bring this about. He knew that the power of God would not fail, no matter what. He knew that God would provide for them, no matter what. And he knew that God would be with them, no matter how dark the valley. Because God is faithful to his promises. This was the reason for his faith, not his own strength within him. And so as we look to apply these things to ourselves, do we believe the promises of God? Do we believe that they apply to us? All of them. And all of them personally. We might think, well, that promise may apply to him or her because they're a real Christian. But what about you? Do you believe all the promises? There are so many to number. We'd be here all night talking about them. But they are for you as a Christian if you are one. Do you believe that God is both willing and able to carry them out? This is what we are to do. I'll give you a local example. We are to cast ourselves afresh upon the Lord. Not to have a strong faith necessarily in ourselves, but to put our faith in the one who is trustworthy. Some of you have crossed over the bridge, the Severn Bridge recently. It didn't require much faith to drive across that, did it? You just trusted in that enormous structure. You didn't hold your breath as you drove over it. We're not to have large faith and that will carry us through. It's what we put our faith in. It's who we put our faith in. And this is what Caleb did. It wasn't his faith in the promises. It was the promise giver whom he had faith in. And this is what we are to do. First of all, I'll just give you an example of something to do. Learn the promises of God. I think Spurgeon has a checkbook of faith where he lists all the promises. Why not buy it and learn them and treasure them and apply them to yourselves and say, they are for me as a Christian. He who promised is faithful. All his promises are yes and amen in Jesus Christ. These are the things that we build ourselves up with. And then, if we needed any encouragement in these things, fourthly and very briefly, we'll see that Caleb was rewarded. Again, not for his faithfulness necessarily. He was faithful, but it's who he had faith in. Some of you will know, if you want to look up later for time's sake, in Joshua chapter 14, that Caleb finishes well. He has to wait for the 40 years to inherit the promised land, but he gets it just as God has promised. Joshua chapter 14, verse 6 to 15. I'll not read the whole passage. Verse 7, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him that was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. And what happens in the next few verses is that the 80-year-old Caleb and his sons have to go up and take that land. And they do by faith. And so, may we be like Caleb. May we be like Caleb, who ultimately cast himself upon God. It's not that he had a large faith, but he followed God fully in believing the promises that God is able to protect, provide, and also that God will be with him by his presence in every circumstance. May we be those at the beginning of this new year and for the rest of our lives who follow God fully. Let us pray together.